Hey, it's Jack from 102.7 ESPN's Game Time, inviting you to watch the FIFA World Cup 26 with Michelob Ultra for Australia versus Egypt. The action happens at Little Woodrow's 5425 Burnett Road this Friday, July 3rd, starting at 11 a.m. Michelob Ultra will be on site with a lot of fun and Ultra giveaways. Michelob Ultra is a superior light beer and the official beer sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 26. Be sure to enjoy an Ultra as you cheer on your favorite team this Friday at Little Woodrow's on Burnett Road.
From the 102.7 ESPN studios in Austin, Texas, this is the Jeff and Ed Show.
Hey, welcome to our little show. Here's the way it works. I riff on stuff and you respond. Pretty straightforward. 512-834-1027. That's 512-834-1027. You can follow me on Twitter. We don't say X around here. If you do, the producer freaks out. On Twitter, I'm at Jeff Ward Show. We just ask that you not suck with your comments. Make the show better if you can. Be interesting, compelling. Plenty for you. That's at Jeff Ward Show. Subscribe to the podcast. The Jeff Ward Show podcast is dropped each afternoon. And even though I look like Shrek, we post a segment to YouTube as well. Subscribe to it, the Jeff Ward Show on YouTube. I'm going to use someone else's show to help all of you, serve as a primer, because I think this is exactly what a lot of people think or wonder, particularly about the World Cup and the games you try to watch and stuff like that. So I think that Rich Eisen, Trey, what time is your show on here? I should know this.
12 to 3.
Okay, that. I don't think it's on 3 because what's his name?
Oh, Senator Feinbaum. Oh, wait, yeah, 12 to 2. 11 to 2.
Yeah, don't forget Senator Feinbaum.
Oh, yeah, he's on from 3 to 4.
I mean, that show, it just that takes the audio business to a new level. So Rich Eisen went where a lot of you have gone, I think. And he, and I'll try to explain. He makes 5 World Cup observations. And even as, you know, a lot of times, and I think this is changing a little bit, but soccer nerds get very offended. We get a little snooty about everyone else not knowing the game or thinking they don't know the game. And I think it's kind of a mistake. That's why I always try to make a comparison to something football related so people can relate. And he makes 5 World Cup observations. They're not wrong. I think I can help you with each one of them. Because I think a lot of you have noticed the same thing. I've picked up on this when I'm having a glass of wine. The perfect example was I'm having a glass of wine. I can't remember what game was on at the time. Of course, there's one guy at the bar who thinks he knows everything. And he is telling everyone how much soccer he knows. He's really kind of the Cliff Clavin of a wine bar. And he then, because people go, there's an offsides call. There's a goal that was called back in whatever game it was. And people sitting at the bar said, I don't really understand that thing. And so this guy, Cliff Clavin, tried to explain to people what offsides was. He had nothing. It was not even close. It was all wrong. Because I think people genuinely are going, wait. Why wasn't that a goal now? Why are they reviewing that? What's up with that? So I do think people have reasonable questions about a lot of stuff. And I think Rich Eisen, I don't know if he is acting as if he knows soccer or not, but I thought he had some reasonable observations, which sound like questions to me. And a lot of you have noticed the exact same things. He's not wrong on any of these.
My top 5 World Cup observations. Number 5, any goalie save must be followed by the goalie yelling at someone, if not everyone. You notice that? The goalie makes a save, spectacular save, and it's not just like good enough. He's got to yell. Is he yelling at his own teammates for poor defense? Is he yelling at the ref for missing a call? Is he yelling at the opponents about, I don't know what they're, but it seems that every save, they've got to stand up and yell at someone, if not everyone. Number 4.
Stop there.
Refs use body language.
That's true. Now, here's a little bit of what's going on there. They're mostly yelling at their own defenders. Goalkeepers are encouraged, taught to be to talk a lot, yell a lot, scream a lot, fight a lot. You are whatever you say goes, right? You're taught as a goalkeeper, if the ball's mine, I'll hurt anybody to get it, including my own guys. They're taught and they're frustrated, whether it's justified or not. Most of the time that Rich Eisen, what he's talking about, when you see a goalkeeper start yelling after making a save, he's snapping at his own defense. They're just used to yelling a lot. I mean, they're supposed to. And it's just sort of understood. Okay, that's number five. There's no other explanation than that. He's not yelling, usually not yelling at the ref. He's yelling at his own people. Because in his mind, that guy shouldn't have been that open for that shot. I saved your ass. I'm going to let you know about it. That's what that is.
True. And this may be the language barrier. If you're an English speaker between some European country that doesn't speak English as its first language, or say someone from against an Arabic nation and you only speak English, that may be it. But the refs are, you know, like sort of like silent movie actors, like we're stuck, like we're done here, or pointing at them. You don't like over, you know, get up, you know, like moving on. You know, they're constantly sure. using their body language, these refs. Number
okay,
three
stop
on
there,
the list.
Stop there. That's very true. Very true. And part of it is a language barrier. But surely you've noticed this too. He just talked about how angry goalkeepers look. Have you noticed how angry referees look? It's like they're scolding their children, right? There is no other sport, and we could debate this, but there is no other sport that I know of in which a referee has more impact on the flow of the game, the outcome of the game, the tempo of the game than in soccer. Now, we would argue the same thing about, you know, to a degree about basketball, but a soccer referee has an even greater impact. And one of the primary reasons why a soccer referee, they're viewed as more important than any other. Even umpires, they are viewed as more impactful as a center ref in a soccer game than any other official in any other sport. And one of the big reasons is a lot of calls are subjective. And not only are a lot of calls subjective, but it's entirely possible you've noticed this too, and I'm surprised he didn't say this, but they are super important. They act as if they're super important. They also approach games with a chip on their shoulder. They just do. They're ready to fight. They do not want to put up with your stuff usually, and they will fight. They will argue with you about it. I can't think of another referee at any level that would get as in your face as a soccer referee will get. But part of that is the power that comes with the job. For instance, one of the most powerful things soccer referees do is they let the play on. You could have a guy get absolutely destroyed in a foul away from the ball. And if that team is on attack and they have possession, he's going to let it go. I don't know of any other sport where you have an advantage, is the term used in soccer, where they allow an advantage. But in soccer, the referee has that kind of power to say, hey, look, keep going with the ball. Your dude's dead back here. I'll deal with that in a minute. So he allows him to have an advantage. It's just a super powerful, dramatic, you know, just like in football, there's F-bombs all over the field all the time. In soccer, they're getting that too, but they'll come and get in your face. You'll see it in particular on corner kicks. Watch tonight in the game. You'll see that referee go get in the middle of a few guys. And he'll look angry at him and he'll point at him. It's just they think and they know they're in control more than any other referee in any sport. Trey, do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, and plus they're very animated when they give out like red cards.
Yeah. It's because they have arguably an outsized powerful role. And they live that way and they act that way.
And they're the only ones that know when the game ends.
Yeah, they have total control. I mean, there's no other sport in which a referee has as much control as a soccer referee does. And so they act like that. And he's right, to a degree, a lot of it is a language barrier. But they also are super animated and feisty because they think that comes with their job. All right. I hope that helps.
On the list, always raise your arm because the ball's never off. Never. How many times the ball go out of bounds for a throw-in or out of bounds for either a corner or a goalie kick, and both teams are putting their arms up? Number two, anytime okay. you're hit so below
that's
the
That's true,
knee,
too. I'll do it while I'm watching a game. I'm trying to think where that comes from. So what he's saying, you'll see this too. And you'll see it, what'll really piss you off. You'll see a team score a goal. Let's say Bosnia scores against the U.S. You'll see half the U.S. defenders with their hand up in the air begging for a call while the play is going on. What they're trying to do is to bait a referee into making a call. That's what they're trying to do. Right? Because you got a referee, if well, they're called assistant referees now. They're linesmen, women. And so they only have three people covering 120 yards. And so it is just at every level you've probably ever played, if you think a dude's offsides, you throw your hand up in the air hoping the official says, yeah, yeah, offsides. And it becomes a habit, and a terrible habit. Even at the highest level, these guys, the best in the world, are going to raise their hands. They're begging, they're hoping for a call. He's right. You'll see an entire back line of defenders with their hand up in the air, hoping somebody calls an offside or hoping somebody calls a handball. And it's, I can't explain exactly where it comes from, but anybody that plays is going to end up doing it. And it's a thing. So if you go, wait a second, why are those guys in the, why are they raising their hand? And the answer is because they're begging for a call and they won't get it, but they're still going to raise their hand to beg for a call. All right.
Corner or goalie kick, and both teams are putting their arms up. Number two, anytime you're hit below the knee, hold your shin, regardless of whether you've been hit in the foot or the knee or the shin, and writhe like you've been stabbed by a foot-long knife. Every time.
Accurate.
Again, you know the rule that I think should be made. If you pull this action, you're not allowed to get up within 20 seconds and run like a deer like it never happened. And my top World Cup observation.
It's true. And it sucks. And I hate it. And people in soccer will say they hate it. And it hasn't changed. Two reasons why none of them are excused. Why you'll see it a million times. A guy gets fouled. Now, it is true. It hurts like heck when you take a screw-in cleat to the shins. I had one guy stick one into my leg one time. And it does hurt, even with shin guards on. It hurts. It hurts to get hit like that. But he is right that you're going to see guys roll as if they have been shot three times in the back. And they're going to keep rolling and keep screaming. And then as soon as they get the call they wanted, they're up and running down the field. It's embarrassing. It is. You see it in basketball too, right? We've talked about it all basketball season. It's a complaint. Is it a Euro thing? No, it's not. The South Americans are going to. The Italians to me are the worst. I can watch an Italian game, and you would think half the team had been killed, the way they're flopping around. So it's now one of the reasons why, particularly late in the games, you'll see guys do this is they're trying to get some rest. They're trying to slow the game down. They're trying to get the thing stopped because they are exhausted. Now that is one of the strategic things about it. You see this in football too. Guys go to a knee and stay down there. They're trying to slow the game down. They're trying to get a break. So there is some strategy to the, oh my gosh, I've been shot look. But by and large, it's trying to buy a call. Just like you would see Luka Doncic or LeBron James. Because in fast motion, like any sport, remember, it's going five times faster than what you're seeing on a screen. So you get hit in the leg and on a fair tackle in soccer, and you leave your feet and land face first and act like you've been shot, you might be able to buy a call. It's flopping 10x is what it is a lot of the times. Some of the time, it's trying to get some rest, trying to slow the game down. He's right about that. Is that a fair assessment, Trey? Would you agree?
Yeah. That's the Netherlands do that a lot, too. Yeah. They'll flop
crazy. I know the Italians. I don't know what it is about the Italians doing it that just drives me up the wall. But you'll see the Americans do it tonight. It's very habit-forming in a game. And it sucks. And the referees just go on without you, and they don't care if you want to lie there. They'll step right over you. It doesn't really have an impact. It just drives you up the wall, and he's right about that. And I don't blame anyone who says, why did that guy act like he just got shot in the face and he's up and running down the field?
I think that's the biggest reason why it hasn't caught on in America.
I do, too. I agree. I hate it. I mean, I really do. It's accepted. I'll tell you who doesn't accept it, is if a player thinks you flopped and taken a dive trying to buy a call, you will see this happen. You will see a defender bend down and get in a guy's face. And what he's telling him is he's dropping an F-bomb saying, get your ass up, you punk. You're trying to buy a call. That's sort of street rules there. Don't try to buy a call by flopping on me. But they still do it. It's fair. Fair point. I don't have a good answer except that. And I'd love to tell you it's going to stop, but it doesn't.
Is... absolutely no one needs, let alone wants, hydration breaks. Nobody does. We don't need it. We don't want it. We don't need it. Fans are booing it now. You know, like they're beginning to boo for the hydration break. Boo. Yeah. You want water? Boo. They're like, fans have become anti-water.
One more.
All right. One more. Some World Cup fans are like the sun. You got to glance and look away.
Yes, except the Americans don't care. You do hear them booed. It's very baby-fied. That's how most places other than here view this stupid hydration break thing.
We're used to that, though.
Right, I know. It's an American...
a lot of stoppages.
We have two-minute warnings. We know there's no point to the two-minute warning except to sell commercial times.
Four quarters.
We watch sports in fragments. The rest of the world, it's unheard of that the flow of play would be stopped. It's just unheard of. And so they don't like it, and they shouldn't like it, and they're right. But we don't see it. We don't watch... Here's one of the things that, listen, I've heard this for generations about soccer in this country. Just because a lot of people play, a lot of people grow up playing, doesn't mean that you want to watch it. Our TV viewing habits as Americans are largely formed by the NFL. And the NFL is a made-for-TV sport. And so soccer, to a degree like baseball, is a far more... purist sport. You just leave it alone, man. And so to a lot of purists, it'd be like having multiple, I don't know, I'm trying to find an example in baseball, but, and we've tinkered with baseball, I know. But it is, this is an American thing. And most Americans don't even bat an eye. Oh, we got a good break. We got a four quarters. And they're he's right. Fans boo it, and it's great. But, you know, what's funny is you do know that a player can stop and step off the field and get a bottle of water. They don't have to take a break. The referee's not going to stop the game so you can go get some water. If you want to go get some water, go get some water. They'll play with 10 men. That's the beauty of soccer, is that the point is you don't stop the game. You want to have two guys go sit on the side and have a cramp? That's your problem. Play with nine. Go get some water. We, Fox, U.S. viewing habits, have turned those into commercial breaks. I watch on Telemundo. They don't cut away.
Yeah, they just have a nice drone shot of the stadium.
Yeah.
And fans, nice.
I love it because it's just unheard of to them. Like, wait, what are we doing here? I don't even know what to do with this. I'm afraid, I keep saying this, I'm afraid it's going to be the new norm. I'm afraid, whoever owns the Premier League and or wherever the soccer league is, I'm afraid the network's going to say, you know what, the Americans have figured out something. We'll make this a four-quarter sport. Make more money. And that just sucks. We don't care.
There might be a revolt if that happens.
I mean, if you think about it, what's the point of the two-minute warning? Seriously, what is that? Does anyone know? Do we have any basis for having a two-minute warning? A warning for what, right? We know exactly what it is. It's just a fancy way of saying sell more ad time and let me just go not pay attention for a couple minutes. That's just not the way. You go to a soccer game in person, it flows, there's a halftime, and then you're done. It just flows. It's the game is built on the pride of not stopping. You'll see guys get hurt. Teams will play with 10 men. You'll see two guys get hurt. You'll see teams will play with 9 men. Because you don't stop until we got a hold of it. I love it when the fans boo. There was a game this morning, England and the Congo.
They hate it.
They were
England
furious.
England hates it.
They were like flipping out. Because it's just not what the sport is. And they're playing in air conditioning. It's not at Zilker Park in mid-August. Even the Brits don't need a break. Oh, they were as angry as any group has been about, quote, the hydration break. It's silly. Purely American thing. And I applaud him for pointing that out. But if you're somewhere watching the game tonight, you watch the people, you watch the American fans, they don't care. It's perfectly normal for our viewing. All right, 512-834-1027. I'm giving him credit. I'm not thrilled with those things being quirky as they are, but I think those are decent observations for the average fan. And I think soccer people have done you a disservice by not wanting to answer those things, not talk about those things, not explain those things. I find it a problem in a lot of the broadcasts. Instead of flag waving all the time, why don't you talk about exactly what you mean? Now, the good thing about offsides, I can tell you the basis of the rule, and that is when the ball is kicked, the last offensive player cannot be even or behind that player. The genius of the technology is they can measure it to the centimeter. And so you now see what it's about. But I fault a lot of soccer people and media for not taking the time to say, hey, here's why that is this thing, or this is why people react a certain way. So I give him credit for doing that. All right, 512-834-1027. On Twitter, it's at Jeff Ward Show.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements. Afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN. Check out the podcast page at 1027ESPN.com. Now back to the Jeff and Ed Show.
All right, on Twitter, here we go. At Jeff Ward Show. It's 111 minutes in, and it's Senegal and Belgium 2-2. So I said, I think if you're a U.S. fan, you want this thing to drag on as long as you can and have them play as hard as they can and all that stuff. And sure enough, that's what's happening. They're dead tired, I can tell you that. All right, the tweets we go after that, after extending it far beyond my usual allotted time to talk about soccer, which is 120 seconds. Not Jeff Ward tweets. I'm confused. You're complaining about the hydration breaks, but you think the strategy of pushing the game into extra time and penalty kicks. Don't the hydration breaks minimize that? I don't watch soccer or basketball. I can't stand the third world emotional meltdowns. Yeah. I'm not sure what you're complaining about. I don't like penalty kicks. I don't think I'm saying as teams use. My criticism of penalty kicks is that, one, it's not the game. And two, lesser teams or team trying to hang on for dear life would much prefer to go to penalty kicks so they suck the life out of the game to take it to penalty kicks. My solution is the golden goal. You play overtime, and whoever scores first is the winner. Period. So I'm not a fan of the whole penalty kick thing. So, Bevo Bob 123 tweets, you said soccer players are constantly trying to slow the game down by flopping for penalties. That's not the only reason why they're flopping. They're trying to get penalties to actually get the advantage. I said sometimes they are rolling around on the ground, staying on the ground because they're worn out. But so why do they complain about the hydration breaks? I don't know that the players are complaining as much as the fans, but the players' complaint is it hurts the flow of the game. If you're playing well, you're moving up and down, you have momentum. It would be like, let's say your quarterback is, you're in a two-minute drill. Your quarterback's completed seven completions in a row. And so some dude on the defensive side goes to the ground, grabs his leg just to try to slow the game down. Of course the players aren't going to want that. So those that are playing well, those that have momentum, aren't wanting the hydration breaks. They're not. I mean, you don't want to interrupt the game. I don't know what that has to do with penalty kicks. No, most of them don't want that. And fans sure the heck don't want that because you're enjoying the flow of the game. The only people that want the hydration breaks are somebody that's on the short end of the game, someone that wants to slow the game down. And Americans are fine with the commercials. John Hawk tweets, a rugby referee fulfills a very similar role as a soccer referee does. He speaks with God's voice. Yeah. I didn't know that, but makes sense. They can even award a penalty try, score, and they play advantage way more than soccer referees do. Okay, well, there you go. That's unlike any other sport. We don't have a sport that we're familiar with in which the referee can say, I know there was a foul, but we're going to keep going on anyway. Advantage. So, yeah. If that's the way it works in rugby, cool. At Texas Hardball tweets, the Powerade break gives me a time to pee and get a beer. Yeah.
That's such an American sentence.
That's exactly why Americans are fine with this. I can't answer if the rest of the world doesn't need to pee or get a beer, but they don't. The refs get more crap off players than any ref or umpire in any sport. Huh. Is that true? Let's see. Let's think about that. I don't know if I'd go that far. They do interact more. They're in each other's face more. You know, the guy with the armband, the captain, is the only one really that's supposed. You'll see this. If he sees another one of his teammates kind of get in a referee's face, he'll go nudge him out of the way. Because the point of being the captain and the captain armband is you are the voice. And a referee will tolerate your stuff. You are sort of given the grace to go and argue with the referee. Your teammates, not so much. But does a soccer referee get more, are players more in his face than anyone? Any other sport?
Baseball.
I was going to say baseball, you know, an argument with a ref is tolerated up to a point.
Yeah.
I mean, they decide when it's too much. But you can go argue calls. Football, maybe not so much.
Ooh, another missed opportunity.
Oh. U.S. was about, if they win tonight, was about to play Belgium if it wasn't for the crossbar. Yeah, I mean, it looks, they just, players and referee in soccer probably talk more than it, going back and forth, maybe than anyone else. But I do think there's a tolerance level in baseball for arguing with an umpire that is, you know, I mean, you're not allowed to argue balls and strikes. There's some rules there, unwritten rules. But, I mean, that's a good observation. That's fair. You know, what is uncool that I don't see in any other sport that is to a degree tolerated is when people surround them. That I don't like, and that is not supposed to happen, but you'll see it. where you'll see three or four people as soon as a call is made, I mean, really getting in his face. And they show some patience to not push back and not argue anymore. So those are good. I mean, those are fair observations. I get it. I get where you're coming from. I'll tell you what happened. I tell you what, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm afraid for the viewing public how that game looks tonight. Here's what Bosnia is known for and will want to do. They'll want to hit guys and slow the game down as much as possible. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they get out and run and play.
They're swarming them right now.
Yeah. Right now, as I'm saying all this, there are about six Belgian players and Senegal players around the referee. But what I'm afraid of for the viewing public is that Bosnia will want to foul so much and slow that game down so much that it gets boring for you. And they have that reputation, and they're outmanned, and they're not going to be able to run with the U.S. And the U.S. style is the ball goes wide, the wide players take it and run at people and beat them and then send it back across. It's an outside-in game because that's where their fastest and best players are, including Christian Pulisic, who's going to get fouled. If you could bet on, if you're doing prop bets, an over-under bet would be on how much he's fouled. It may be six or eight, and they'll be hard, really hard. Because that's not new. He's a guy that gets hurt a lot. He's not a big guy. He's easy to knock off the ball, and that's what teams will do, especially if you think you're outmanned. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope the game doesn't get bogged down into guys getting hacked to pieces. But I'm afraid that's the case. And that's, I don't know how well the U.S. deals with that. I really don't know. But I think that might be the Bosnian strategy. Go as, push it as far as you can, foul as much as you can while not getting guys kicked out of the game. See how the U.S. deals with it. Got to score early to make your opponent to come out and play the game. The longer you keep the game low scoring, the more a team will sit back and foul and try to suck the life out of a game. All right, there you go. That is more soccer talk that's ever been allowed.
Ever.
Ever. That's like compiling all the soccer talk of like 5 years into 1 hour.
Yeah, that was like a whole segment.
Yeah. But there's going to be 30 million people watching tonight.
That's insane.
I mean, normally I would say this is stupid. Even though I want to talk about it, and I think I know what I'm talking about, I can't because no one really cares. This is one of the few times in an hour and a half, 30 million people are going to be watching a soccer game. So it's probably worthwhile talking about it. And the belief is that, oh, my. Oh,
they got a penalty. Oh, no. They just gave, did they just give Senegal or was
Belgium.
It? Belgium just got a penalty. And it's the guy who scored the tying goal.
Oh, so Belgium and Senegal, it is in the 120th minute. There's going to be an accusation.
Match fixing.
Yeah. This is going to be viewed as European favoritism. But in the 120th minute, because of replay, VAR is what it's called in the rest of the world, the referee decided that there was a foul inside the box and is awarded a penalty. I think it's a little of a stretch. I wouldn't be making that call in 120 minutes in. I mean, you're a minute away from going to penalty kicks. And awarded a penalty kick for Belgium, who...
Let's get this game over with. We got America coming up.
Yeah, that's right. That's what Fox is in his ear. Like the referees have all this mechanical devices and electronics on their body. Fox is saying, end this now. We've got a pregame show we've sold. We need to do some flag waving.
It's like the Buffalo Wild Wings commercial.
That's right. You gotta. It's over. Game over. Ref, penalty kick now. We need to get us some flag waving.
It looks like the Senegalese player look like they've already lost the game. Yeah. They're like downtrodden and they can't. It's like they've seen a ghost.
120th minute to call a penalty kick is the football equivalent of that is here's what I would say. You know that Hail Mary at the end of a half or end of a game, calling interference on that.
That never happens.
Never happens, right? You've never, never seen a one of those jump balls at the end of a game. You've never seen an interference call made. That's what calling a penalty kick on a kind of iffy call at the 120th minute is the equivalent. All right. On Twitter, it's at Jeff Ward Show.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements. Afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN. You're listening to the Jeff and Ed Show on 102.7 ESPN.
Well, if the U.S. wins their game in a couple of hours, over around 9, they their opponent, and that's going to be Belgium, because in the 120th minute of extra time, in a pretty iffy call, Belgium was awarded a penalty kick and converted. So, you know, we got. I'm trying to think what the accusations are going to be. Race may be thrown out there. I don't know about a match fix. I don't know. I actually think it's a decent draw for the U.S. I don't think it's awful. This is not Belgium of years ago. It's kind of a clunky team. So it's not of the 16 that will be of the teams that will be left. It's not a terrible draw for the U.S.
There's still 4 more minutes of extra time though. So, but that. That'll
suck the life out of you, man. You've made 119 minutes.
They look like they were already beat before the penalty was even kicked.
That's rough. So the expectation for this evening, remember, the New York Times is, so far it's been 23 to 25 million for the U.S. games on average. Oddly enough, I mentioned this yesterday, Kansas City, for both the Spanish language and English language broadcast, has been the biggest rating of any city in the United States. Austin has been number 2. And I have no idea how to make sense of that Kansas City thing. But the expectation is tonight that there would be 30 million. And if they advance and they start getting closer to a final 8, which I think is possible, the projection is that you're looking at NFC, AFC championship game-like numbers for the U.S. around 40 to 50 million. It's already, the projection, I guess it's already happened. I guess the bets, well, I guess you still have time. But I mentioned this earlier that the game this evening will be the most bet World Cup game in history, which is just nuts to me. Because in the rest of the world, betting has been legal forever. But as of now, according to the bookmakers, the game tonight is expected to be the most bet World Cup game ever, with the U.S. at a minus 700 favorite, minus 300 to win the game in regulation, and the over-under is at 2.5 goals. So the previous biggest handle was the 2022 final between France and Argentina. I'm not quite sure that doesn't happen again. And the expectation is that this game, which is crazy to me, that will be the most bet game ever. 92% of the money is going to the U.S. and 84% of the bets are that Christian Pulisic scores a goal. I told you the bet to make, and that is each team scores. And the U.S. now, leading up now is at 30-1 to win the World Cup. It started at 60-1. It's now at 30-1. The Vegas odds makers or the sports books have said if the U.S. were to really go on and win at 30-1, they would lose their shirt. It would be a brutal loss for the bookmakers. That's if they go on and win the whole thing. I suggest at plus 110, the bet to make, not that it's legal and Ken Paxton would come after you, the bet to make is for each team to score. That's what I would suggest. Oh, my. Senegal has almost a penalty kick. It's sitting right at the top of the D, inside the D. So they're approximately 16 yards away from tying the game at 124 minutes.
Now they got a free kick?
Yeah.
Man, this is drama.
Senegal. I hope this, just for karma's sake, I hope Senegal. So they get a Belgium has a handball. Neither team is the smartest. I got to tell you, they're not exactly defending their way to a title. So Belgium gets a handball 2 yards outside of their penalty box. So we're looking at a shot that's approximately 22 yards straight on at the goal. And probably maybe 2 minutes left in the game and extra time. And I don't even know why it's that, but it is. So if there's any justice in the world, Senegal would convert. And you would take this whole thing to...
And he went wide.
He went over the top. Jeez.
That is Sarr, the legendary Premier League player.
Yeah, well, you need to kind of put it on frame there, buddy. Today is the anniversary of... What's the worst sports contract of all time? Deshaun Watson? Probably. Previously, it was Bobby Bonilla. How about this? Today, July 1st, former Major League player Bobby Bonilla, I'm not even sure what he hit in his last year with the Mets, maybe 240? Bobby Bonilla gets $1.93 million today. He gets $1.93 million every year on July 1st since 2011. It goes from 2011 of $1.93 million on July 1st through 2035. The belief is it's the weirdest contract in sports history. So you know who else is going to have a deal like that, though? The Dodgers are going to be paying Shohei Ohtani the same way.
I think right after Bonilla's ends, Ohtani's begins.
Yeah, I mean, he's they back-ended his money. And I don't know, for maybe tax purpose. I don't understand the complete logic behind that. But I think it's, what is it, $700 million?
Yeah.
And it starts when he's 60 or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's about that.
So
I think
Bobby,
it's like
I don't know what, I mean, I don't even know. Was Bobby Bonilla even playing in 2011?
No.
Yeah.
His last year was 2001 on the St. Louis Cardinals.
What did he hit?
213. With an OPS of 647.
Okay. He didn't even finish with the Mets. And the contract kicks in to pay him 1.93 starting in 2011 from the Mets. Who he wasn't even playing for. He was hitting a buck, you know, 210 for the Cardinals. So he's paid that every July 1st up until 2035. So at least I think when we do the same thing about Shohei Ohtani's when he's 60 or whatever, at least we can say in the end he probably was still producing. Bobby Bonilla was a bust. He was fat and a bust. At least with Ohtani, I'm assuming that near the end, he's still going to be a really good player and a productive player. Great player. I don't know if he'll be great by that whenever he's done, but his deal kicks in a very similar way, which is just nuts to me. It is believed after last night, I mean, Mexico I thought was really, really impressive. I did. I think they like where they are. I think they like where they are a lot because it was a different looking Mexican side because they came out and ran a little bit and were on the front foot some. It is believed that Azteca Stadium is the biggest home field advantage in all sports. I don't know. I've never been to Azteca. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know how are we going to even argue that. But it's believed to be, and I guess this was a poll that's done, that the stadium in Mexico City that holds 100 and did hold 110, I don't know now, would be the biggest advantage, home field advantage in all of sports. I would think it would be somewhere like in Bolivia or Ecuador or something where you're playing. I know in Mexico you're playing at mile and a half, 2 miles.
It's about right, yeah.
I think that's right. I would think there'd be somewhere else which you're playing at 9 or 10,000 feet would be a bigger advantage. But in Mexico City, you're playing at altitude and it's a crazy crowd. But would that be the biggest advantage in all of sports? What's the biggest home field advantage in American sports?
Probably the Seahawks. Either the Seahawks.
Denver, maybe.
Yeah, Denver or Arrowhead.
Yeah. Seattle might be it.
Denver, they got the loudest crowd.
Would Tiger Stadium at LSU be in the top five? I bet it would be.
Happy Valley?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. In college football, it's going to be Tiger Stadium, Happy Valley. Oh, I bet you in Oregon, too.
Yeah, they're up pretty high.
But no, I guess nothing would compare to Azteca. So that's what the poll says, that it's the biggest home field advantage in, I got to believe there's like some, like in, I don't know, some Eastern place, some Eastern block would be some Russian stadium somewhere.
Galatasaray's stadium is called Hell, so that's.
But they claim Azteca Stadium, where Mexico beat Ecuador last night, is the biggest home field advantage in all of sports.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 102.7 ESPN.